That's where you are?
Desley Beckman, CFO.
Matt Giesling with the Sac Step 4 Board.
Good morning, I'm Dan Monk with the Sacramento Police Department.
Nolan Kemmerman with Loaves and Fishes.
Alexis Bernard from Community Programs.
Seth Eisler, City of Rancho Cordova.
Cindy Kavanaugh, County of Sacramento.
John Crane, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee.
Kathy Creswell, Sacramento Housing Alliance.
John Foley, Sacramento Self-Help Housing.
Deanne Dwyer, Downtown Sacramento Partnership.
Emily Halkin, City of Sacramento.
Karen Johansson, TLCS.
Great, thank you. So, okay. And welcome to all of our guests. There's a lot of you, so we won't have you introduce all of yourselves, but we appreciate you being here. So we'll move on to review and approval of minutes. Are there any questions or comments on the minutes that... Unless folks have reviewed it in the email, then we'll just move this item to next month and we'll make sure that we do both minutes next time. And as I mentioned, Jonathan is not here this morning, obviously. So we will skip the chair's report since I'm not sure what he was planning to say. And he didn't give me a lot of time to prepare remarks. And we'll move on to the CEO's report.
Great. Thank you and good morning, everyone. I was reminded as I walked in that this is my 1 month anniversary. And I just want to let you know I'm really happy to be here and I'm really enjoying and getting a chance to meet with a lot of people here, see a lot of good work that's being done. And in the time that I've been gone, when you're in the kettle, you don't always see the progress that you're making, but I can see a lot of progress and collaboration that's happening at the community level that I'm really pleased to see. I know we can do better, but I think there's a lot of good things going on. So thank you all for the work that you've been doing to address homelessness in our community. I've been in my travels. I've been, of course, focusing on work and understanding what's going on within Sacramento Steps 4, but my real focus has been on meeting with partners and stakeholders and participating in the process that you already have in place to work together. Numerous meetings with our city and county partners, of course, and focusing on a number of issues. I've also had a chance to participate in the data dashboard committee between the city and county and stakeholders. The county's No Place Like Home team. Had a good initial meeting with ACT and looking forward to more of those. I've been participating in the coordinated entry committee and seeing the good work that's being done there. I had a chance to take a short walk along with our navigator who's assigned to the Foreign and Equitable Partnership, and that was really a good experience to see the work that she's doing out there in the community and her commitment to helping people where they are. As you all know, it's a really busy time. The NOFA's out, and you're going to hear a lot more about that from Michelle and Sarah. Meanwhile, Cindy will be talking to you about what's coming up with the No Place Like Home initiative and the planning process attached to that. I think stakeholders are starting to hear about that as well. And though we're not scheduling a discussion about this month, we'll be talking to you shortly about what's going on with SB 850, which will be called the HEAP program. I can't tell you what it stands for right now, but obviously there's a lot of money that can potentially come to the community to do things that we haven't been able to do before, and that's a wonderful opportunity for partnership for people around the table. So I know you'll be hearing more about that as well. With that, a couple small notes, and then let's get on with the meeting. I just did want to point out that we did include in your packet a follow-up log. We're experimenting with the format, making sure that it's crisp and easy to read, but hopefully it captures issues that you brought up at past meetings, and we're tracking how we're following up. I'm not sure we can talk about it, but our commitment is to make sure you always have this in your packet and we'll keep moving things forward. So that's my comments for today, and I look forward to meeting.
Thank you. All right, we will move on to the CFO's report.
Good morning. Last month during the meeting, there were a few requests that came up from the CDC Advisory Board regarding budgetary items. And so we've come back to you and have put together the budgets that you requested. I also want to let you know that if there are other things that you would like to hear from us, as far as from a staffing level, we're really happy to come and provide that information to you. The two items that were asked for were the HMIS budget and then also the planning grant budget for the current year. And so I'll explain a little bit about that as we go along. But in your packet, there's a color-coded sheet here. The blue is the HMIS grant budget. I also wanted to say that this would have been included last week, except last week was a holiday week, and I was actually out of town on the day that everything needed to be submitted. So next time it will be included in your packet, so you have enough time to review it before the meeting. So the HMIS budget is pretty much the same that it's been since the beginning of all of our HMIS grants. We previously had three grants, and they're all consolidated into one now. So there are multiple components on this. Administration is the amount that HUD gives us for administering the actual contract. So it's not necessarily administration like we would think of administrative fees, like rent and that sort of thing. It's actually somebody has to be actively administering this contract under our agreement with HUD. So there's $14,490 a year that comes to us for that, and that pays for a portion of the staff member who is assigned to managing the contract. And then we have software costs of $79,547. That pays for our Clarity BitFocus contract. Currently we subcontract out with Clarity BitFocus for our HMIS data system. Then we have personnel. We have three full-time personnel that are assigned to HMIS. We have a senior data analyst, an HMIS administrator, and a referral specialist. Sometimes those positions will change year to year depending on what our need is within the staffing component of the HMIS department. However, we have had three full-time equivalent employees from the beginning of the consolidated grant. And then we have a little bit under space and operations. And so this sometimes is kind of a filler number, but the $3,964 is for, we use that towards our facility or our rent expense. So the total that we receive from HUD is $273,194 every year. As some of you know, sometimes you can't spend all your money in a grant, and you're struggling to find how you're going to spend it. We don't have a problem with that with HMIS. So we have no problem matching this. Our match component is $68,298.50. We match that with additional costs to Clarity. Currently, we're spending almost $11,000 a month on our Clarity contract. We have chosen, the data committee has chosen throughout the years, and we've found other ways to pay for it, but not to pass that additional expense, the user fees, onto the providers, because we feel that they already have enough of a heavy lift in their own admin. And so we've found other ways to pay for that, and we use that as a match. So we have additional software costs, staffing, and rent expense that we use to match the HUD funds. And that match is paid for through primarily through other SSF funding that we receive. And sometimes there's a match component that we can match through our SHRA COC admin grant. So that's our HMIS grant budget. It might be good at some point, maybe, I don't know, during this NOFA cycle, but at some point to really think about if we needed to expand and if there was a need to add more staffing or to ramp up. The data portion of this, we have the data planning under the planning grant, so we may not need more, you know, money for data within HMIS, but at some point, you know, we may want to look at increasing the amount that comes to HMIS
through all of our NOFA funding. But this amount primarily has been the same over the last 3 or 4 years. The $273,000 is relatively the same. We have not had any significant decrease or increase. So that's where we are with our HMIS budget. Does anybody have questions on this? I also want to say that if you do have questions, we're happy to answer them after. By email, you can contact me if you have something. I know Dion is the chair of the committee, and so he's happy to take questions that you might want to ask him or Michelle or I. Right?
Absolutely.
Good.
So just what's the match requirement from HUD? Is it a percentage or what?
Yes, typically it's 25%. And it's 25% not including admin, typically. It's usually all the other costs. Yes.
Is this the include everything within the data unit SSF?
No. No. So we'll talk about the data planning, and I'll touch on part of that. And then, again, if that doesn't answer completely the questions that you have around data and how we've got that structured, we're happy to come back with that as well. So I'm going to move on, and if you flip over your page to the planning grant, you can talk about the COC planning grant. So this is the fiscal year 2017 planning grant. As you can see, it's called a funding request. So this was the funding request that we submitted with last year's NOFA that was approved, but we are still waiting for a contract from HUD. So it isn't an official budget. We do have it set. They do expect for us to execute the funding in the way that they have approved it. However, we don't have a contract at this point. So there are multiple things, and I just want to make this clear, that there are multiple things that we went ahead because we had to get our data department going. So we've gone ahead and we found other funding to pay for some of the positions that I'll outline here. And we're really looking forward to having this money to be able to draw on and to pay for that funding as soon as we can, or pay for those positions. So with our this planning grant, there are three major components that we presented to HUD and that they're expecting from us. The first one is COC application activities. That's the consulting contract for the year-round performance review and the annual NOFA projects competition review and rank. So currently, our consultant on that is Homebase. So this is the amount that is paid for that consulting component for the COC, and the budgeted amount that we have is $100,000. Kathy had asked last month, what's this replacing? So as you can see, the prior funding, I have two columns, prior funding and the source of prior funding. So the prior funding, last year we had $69,000 that was paid out of our SHRA COC admin contract, and then we had $15,000 that was paid out of a previous year planning grant. So we had a smaller planning grant for the fiscal year 2015. So we had $84,000 that we paid for Homebase during 2017. We're expecting $100,000 during 2018, and that is that increases because we have an increase in activity that we're expecting our consultant to provide to us. So, and again, we do not have any of these funds yet, and we expect that probably within a month we'll have a contract, and then we'll be able to start drawing on these funds. So it's actually not even a fiscal year type timing. The second item is HUD compliance activities. So this specifically is for the 2019 unsheltered point in time count. So this is the staffing and consulting contract for the research on this. Again, we don't have the funding for it, but we are preparing. The last point in time count, our consultant was the University Enterprises, which is the research arm of Sac State.
and we are preparing an RFP. It's in process currently, and then we also will be staffing up in the fall appropriately. But because we don't have this money in hand, we don't want to spend money that we don't have already. And so we're anticipating $120,000 for this expense for the 2019 point time count. And previously, we had received $50,000 from the County of Sacramento. It was a special funding. And $45,000 from out of our HUD fiscal year 2015 planning grant. And then we were able to allocate $15,000 out of our SHRA CFC admin contract. So we spent $110,000 for the last point in time count. We expect to spend a little bit more this time. There's some more sophisticated ways of obtaining information. So we'll find out what we need to do once we have our consultant in place. But we'll have plenty of funding for this PIT count, which is, this is just really a gift to us to not be scrambling to figure out how we're gonna pay for PIT. The third component is developing a COC system, and this is the data hub. So this speaks to part of what Cindy was just asking about. So this is the staffing and consulting subcontracting costs associated with system level performance evaluation, gaps analysis, and year-round stakeholder engagement on reporting and analysis. And then this is to develop and implement an evaluation. So, and these definitions are verbatim from what we submitted to HUD in our application. So you're seeing exactly what we submitted to HUD. There's $361,035 under this line item. And this is comprised of three full-time equivalent staff members. Currently, we have a manager of data analytics and research, data analyst, and a data quality specialist. Okay, and it also includes consultants, software, and equipment. Part of that is still under the formation, so we haven't actually contracted with anybody outside of what we're doing inside our staffing. And I misspoke last time, and I want to apologize. The City of Sacramento has been a great partner with us on helping to fund two of these positions, portion 0.5 of two of the positions for the last year. They've been funding half of the manager of data analytics and research and the data quality specialist. That funding ended June 30th, and when I think, I'm just thinking ahead, I'm already in 2020, honestly, financially. So I'm thinking 6 months to 18 months ahead, and I misspoke that the city, we weren't receiving any funding. And we have received funding, and actually without that funding, it would have made it really difficult for us to continue. So we do thank the city for that. And the other way that we've met this need in the current time until we're waiting for this funding to come through is that Sutter Health gave us a big donation during 2015, and then another one in 2017. And so we're using that 2017 funding for our data department, and we've been able to staff up without delay. So we were able to bring on Chris, which has been, as all of you know, has been a real boon for us, and then also for, you know, some of the other data positions that we have. So we haven't had to delay waiting for this contract. I mean, we're waiting for other head contracts, and we're already 2 months behind. So you can imagine that this would have put us behind as well for staffing. So the total for the COC planning grant, the request was $581,035. So you can imagine there's a big lift on the match component to this. The match is $145,259. It's a large amount, $726,294,000 total for this. The match, we are matching through our SHRA COC admin grant and our general funds, as I told you, primarily through this other Sutter money that we had. And we are matching it through the expenses of our staffing, the additional expenses of staffing and some of the other things that we'll use to build this out. And again, this you know, this hasn't been executed yet. So we're still waiting for that contract. But we, you know, we're really grateful to be able to have this and to be, this actually was an impetus for us to really start building out our data team because we could see the light at the end of the tunnel. So that is the planning grant for fiscal year 2017. Obviously, we're in the midst of our 2018 NOFA, and we have another opportunity to apply for a planning grant during 2018.
On the last activity in the planning grant, seems to suggest that these are distinct activities, but it sounds like, correct me wrong, so how much of the, because these FTEs are working on many more things outside of this, they're not just working on this, so how much of the FTEs for these positions are housed within the planning grant, how much is available for broader COC activities for which I know they're doing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think pretty much for most of what our staff is doing currently is really honing in on the COC's requests for gaps analysis, for rank and review support. There are a lot of the data. You can speak to that a little bit better too, Michelle. So it's at least three quarters of their time that's spent on activities that are specific.
So this is actually not three FTEs, it's 0.75 FTEs. I'm just trying to figure out how much of
yes.
their salaries do
pay. So, and currently we're not drawing anything from this grant. So we probably would have the ability, I'm trying to think, I hadn't figured out where we are. I think we probably have, we currently within the data department, we have four full-time individuals. And I would say that at least three of them are being are specific to these planning grant activities.
Okay, I understand that they're not exclusive. Yes, that's the point. I get that they're specific.
Right.
It doesn't.
No,
it's
broader, probably 0.75 of each of them is
right.
What I would say. So, 0.75 of four different people.
So are these the same three people here? I'm just trying to figure out. Like, are these?
No. No, and. So we have, and I'm not counting the HMIS, you know, we don't have an overlap of personnel between these two contracts.
But they do have an overlap of duties, that's my point.
Yes.
It doesn't matter right now.
Yes, I mean the
they're
HMIS.
They're working in multiple places, but they're being paid out of one place.
There are multiple funding streams, or two funding streams for a couple of people. The other thing too is that we have we're paying for several positions currently out of 2017 Sutter funding. Obviously, that doesn't go on forever and ever. We're not receiving 2018 Sutter funding, so we're paying for those positions, awaiting being able to switch it and be able to draw out of the planning grant. But there are activities that are not specific to the COC planning grant activities that the staff is doing.
So as Desley mentioned, this is currently still in the funding request phase, and the next step in the process is really, they're called issues and conditions, but we'll drill down and clearly articulate the 0.75 and which staff positions are actually in here. So that we're allocating properly, that they're not spending their time exclusively on these activities.
I also think of sustainability.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
right.
If this planning grant doesn't give her, you know, and paying for a full staff who does duties
yes.
way across the, that's really important. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, and we're looking out to pretty much if, you know, if we receive, well, this funding will probably start in August and go through next July, which gives us a really good jump into 2019. And so, you know, we're looking at all the different components and how we can staff somebody through 2019. And then if we had a continuance of this planning grant, we can continue that. We're also looking at building systems that then we wouldn't need necessarily as many staff to run. So we're looking at all of those as
those things as well. So, and it's not that we don't want to employ people, but it's really nice if you can build something that can be a little bit more self-sustaining. But as you know, we had a lot of work to do within the data department. They've done an incredible amount of work in the last 8 months that Chris has been on, and they're continuing to really focus on things, and some things take a lot longer. So we want to give them all the resources that they need to be successful. And again, it has been a mutual rift, and this planning grant is good. And we can definitely, we'll figure out the staffing a little bit more as we receive the funding. Yeah.
Is there one other question? Yeah. A couple more questions? All right. We do have some limited time, and we need to get to the important business.
So, Michelle, we had talked about the coordinated entry evaluation and getting outside support. I know it's not listed in here. So I guess my question really is, so will we have an opportunity to talk through how we want to spend this money and have a more full report about this down the road, or how does that work?
The intent of the data hub is to actually have ongoing discussion of what is funded, what type of evaluation is being funded along the way to build out our COC system. So those conversations would actually happen at convenings of this group of the data hub. The researchers from different universities who are interested in partnering with us, representatives of the advisory board and local government. So it'll actually be like another committee focused on data, and that's where we can talk about, okay, we need to now do an outside evaluation of entry, or we want to do something else with this gaps analysis.
So they would function as a committee of the advisory board and bring back reports for our decision making. Is that what you mean?
I haven't thought through whether it's an official committee of the advisory board or if it's a committee of SSF, but there would definitely be reporting function back and forth and representation.
Well, I think we're responsible for how this money gets spent, so we need to make the decision on ultimately on that, don't we? Isn't that true or not?
The advisory board, well, SSF is the recipient of the funding, and the advisory board is responsible for ensuring that we spend the funds on what's allowable and follow through.
I thought the advisory board was the recipient of the funding, and we delegated to you the activity.
Well, actually, I think that we should probably talk about this under in the executive and governance committees, specific to the COC application and the planning grants every year, to figure out exactly, does the advisory board approve these things? Do they endorse them? Or what is the definition of that? Because I've been doing some research on trying to figure out exactly what that role is. There's definitely a role there and engagement there. And we can definitely get to that answer.
Yeah, I'm happy to defer to the governance committee.
Yeah.
So my question was primarily about having input as part of the application process. So if we're deferring it there, I just want to make sure we report back. It's my view that this committee is the one submitting the application via our administrative entity. So I think that's a really important question. So I will just ask one question. Do we procure the COC consultant, application consultant, and when was the last time we procured?
We have never procured a Sacramento Steps Forward. So we work with Homebase, continuing the relationship that county had previously, and we are planning to do procurement at the close of this NOFA cycle.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll just quickly, I'm just trying to understand the purpose of the planning grant. Is it designed to sort of fund existing activities, which is what to large degree it appears to be doing, versus allowing us to do things that we aren't otherwise? So it appears to be supplanting existing funding as opposed to identifying predominantly new activities that we weren't able to do before. And I'm trying to understand that.
Sure. So the planning grant is intended to make funds available for us to fulfill some of these previously unfunded mandates from HUD. So in some instances, it is replacing funds that we previously received elsewhere. And then it also allows us to
do more work on additional expectations that HUD has for us that we haven't been able to fulfill because they're expensive. And so I understand that makes sense, but then of the funding that we previously got, at some point, can you clarify what was one-time funding, so we weren't expecting to get it again, versus funding we are continuing to get, which then seems to mean we have a little bit of resources that previously had been allocated in one place and now are not, and what's the plan for those?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's move along then to our new business items. Item A is our scoring tool amendments. So you probably all remember the meeting we had a couple of months ago to discuss the scoring tool and approve the scoring tool. And as HUD sometimes does, you might even say usually does, they have made some changes to the NOFA that require some changes to our scoring tool, particularly related to domestic violence. In addition, we had some unanticipated data collection problems that are requiring some edits to a couple of the measures on the renewal scoring tool. And so we have our consultants from Homebase. I believe Jason is going to present in brief the changes to the tools. Please note that the versions that you have here are different than the versions that were circulated by email for the new project scoring tool. The points for the DV section. Oh no, actually this is not right.
So I actually have
the
most
updated version. Okay. So can you circulate those? Right, that would be great.
So we should ignore the ones that were handed out?
You should ignore the new project scoring tool that you were handed out, the green one. Yes. Mm-hmm. I believe that the blue one is still accurate.
Correct.
So we didn't quite have enough.
Not the new one.
There's some more coming.
The text is all the same between the version online and the version we're passing out. The only difference is in the numbers, and I'll carefully read those out. So we're going to start with the blue renewal tool on page 4. We just want to touch on the domestic violence factors first, and then Kelly will go over some of the other changes.
Page 4?
So here we go, here's page 4. So one of the things that's new in this year's NOFA is HUD is directly awarding points to communities that have a scoring process that encourages providers who are able to improve safety for survivors of domestic violence. And so in addition to, does your community have domestic violence programs, and are you coordinating with them, and are you serving survivors, they want us to essentially give a higher score specifically to programs that promote safety. And so, and we already have some special points available and some of the other factors like special populations factor, but just to make sure that we're covering the exact language in the HUD NOFA, we now have this language in the quality of services factor that points can be provided if the project provides services that improve the safety for survivors of domestic violence, dating violence and sexual assault, stalking, or human trafficking. So that's the recommended language. It's pretty much straight out of the part of the NOPA that evaluates the community scoring tools. It should result in a modest improvement in Sacramento's score in the national competition, which marginally improves our chances of getting one more project funded. And that's what that's doing there. It's just sort of.
Do you want us to not ask during or?
Jason, what's your preference? If there's clarification questions, do you want them during your presentation or held till the end?
We'll take them in chunks. So let me cover all the DB stuff, then I'll take questions on DB stuff, and then Kelly will cover some of the data questions, and she'll take questions on that. Thank you. So in the green new project scoring tool, we likewise have the similar language on page 2. Safety and service providers are designed to protect the safety of the population they serve as part of the means to have appropriate housing. Similar language on page 3, appropriate supportive services, reflects the language. Safety and service providers will provide services that improve safety. The first really new substantive change is we've provided a suggested alternate prioritization section. So on page 6 is the start of the prioritization section. There's a new stream of funding that's available this year for the first time. It's called a DB bonus project or DB bonus funding. And the idea is it's bonus above and beyond the usual renewable stream of funding for the continuum of care. So in addition to the money that would ordinarily be available to renew projects or to replace projects that are being reallocated, and in addition to ordinary bonus funding that could fund a new housing project, there's a separate stream of bonus funding just earmarked for victim service providers. So it's only available to projects that are dedicating all of the beds in that project to people who are actively fleeing some form of domestic violence. Any other type of project would continue to use this page and the next page, the standard housing prioritization section. However, we suggest that one of these projects that's applying to the new dedicated funding stream, the DB bonus funding stream, could replace these two pages with page 8. Page 8. The idea is we've got prioritization just for this DB bonus housing. And there are some special things that were announced in the NOPA that HUD is asking for. They asked the COC to quantify the needs, meaning how many victims of domestic violence are going unserved. They asked to show that the project will address that need, meaning why will this project help? How does it close the gap? They want to see that the agency has at least some previous experience serving victims of domestic violence. They want to see that the project has the ability to house survivors and that it has the ability to keep those survivors safe. So there is an arithmetic error on this page, and Coinbase regrets the error. We fixed it in the physical handout that we just distributed. Instead of 20 points, it should be 15 points. And one way of getting to 15 points is to cut these bullet points on top to 1 point each. So we have 3 points for the first factor, 3 points for the second factor, 4 points for the third factor, and then leave the bottom the same, 2 and 3. So it would be 3, 3, 4, 2, 3. And that would make it the same 15 points that you would see in the prioritization section for ordinary housing projects. So the intent is not to privilege or penalize the domestic violence bonus housing projects, but just to put them on a level footing and to focus on the specific factors that HUD has said it's going to use to determine whether to provide funding for a domestic violence bonus housing project. Now I'll take questions.
Cindy,
so this is for permanent housing?
This can cover permanent supportive housing, rapid rehousing, or the joint program.
transitional?
The hybrid, right, rapid rehousing, transitional housing, hybrid. So rapid rehousing, transitional housing, hybrid.
So is the bonus for the NOCA percentage with me, or is it $50,000 that I thought I heard?
So there's a minimum of $50,000, and a sort of intermediate maximum of 10% of, I think, the PPRN. And then there's a higher maximum of 5 million or 500,000, it's for Los Angeles. So yeah, it's gonna be 10% here.
So since it's a relatively small amount of money, is it okay to mix regular bonus money funding with DB funding? So a certain percentage of your bids would be earmarked for DB and another percentage for regular bonus.
It would probably be easier and more competitive to split that up into two separate projects. You could have them in the same building, you could fund it with this, you could send the same staff to take care of that. We would prefer not to have to try to have the same grant application mixing the two funding streams, because it makes it very difficult to figure out what we're asking HUD for. And we need to request from HUD that they fund some particular set of projects using particular set of funding, a local competition that ranks those projects against each other. So if your grant application requires two different HUD COC funding streams to get off the ground, then that's problematic.
Okay, Cindy had one more question, so I'm going to let Cindy ask her question.
So under the 2-point category in the green, and I think it was in the green. Don't all the service provider programs improve the safety? I mean, how do you get points for that? Is it only for victim service providers? It seems odd, given that that's what they do. So can you talk a little bit about the intent there?
Sure, I hear you. It's a little bit odd, and it's maybe even slightly superficial.
Okay.
HUD has not really asked for a detailed analysis of safety in the ordinary funding stream. They just want to make sure that the scoring process helps improve safety for survivors, and you know, these same regulations are issued to sophisticated places like Sacramento and also to some very small rural counties that may not have thought to explicitly take a look at that kind of thing. So the assumption is this will tend to improve the score of domestic violence service providers on the quality of services factor.
So they don't have to do the other things. They don't get scored on the other things, such as staying housed, competent and well coordinated.
They still could, but it would allow the review and rank panel to award full credit to a domestic violence service provider solely based on their ability to enhance safety for those 2 points.
Erin.
So just to be clear, the hybrid program last year was specifically to youth. So have they added domestic violence to that hybrid program this year? Are you sure about that? I guess I'm questioning.
The hybrid meaning a hybrid of rapid rehousing?
The transition to rapid rehousing was specifically for youth last year. So if that has changed, that would be good for people to know.
Yeah, okay, Kelly's gonna address that then.
Okay, John.
Yeah, I didn't understand your original point, but are you saying that HUD, we could score more points with HUD by doing something with this? Does it mean we actually have to have a program we're funding more points?
No.
How do we get more points?
HUD is directly.
That's the key question.
So there's some short language on page 4 of the renewal project scoring tool. That's point seeking, right? I mean, there's HUD is directly assessing the scoring tools, the evaluation process, and saying, does this evaluation process reward programs that enhance safety?
So we get more points just by doing the scoring tool?
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure. Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
So then are we going to
I'm sorry. We're going to take questions from the board for a little bit, given our limited time.
So I just want to be clear, because you mentioned, Jason, that the thought here is that if you're a non-victim service provider, you'd use the existing prioritization. And if you are a victim, you would default to the purple part. And that's yes. So that means then a victim service provider wouldn't need to be housing first, wouldn't need to prioritize chronically homeless, wouldn't need to have a plan to adequately address folks who we otherwise said are critically important, like unsheltered, LGBT. That is the way it's written. Like now it's sort of if you're a victim service provider, it's a subjective how well we think you provide safety. But if you're not, then you have to actually show outcomes on housing. That's the way it kind of reads. So I want to hear from you that was your intention, A, and that B, that is actually required by HUD.
So there's a special threshold factor for projects applying for the domestic violence bonus funding, and that is that they are housing first. Not that they aspire to housing first, not that their policies are on the road to compliance with housing first, just that they are housing first. And so, you know, we'll be working with anyone who applies for that funding to make sure that they can clear that threshold. It's sometimes a little awkward to speak of a domestic violence service provider as focusing on a chronically homeless population. It can be done, but people who are actively fleeing domestic violence are often, you know, fleeing a house that had domestic violence in it, and so are not chronically homeless. It's not that, and people who are actively fleeing domestic violence are themselves, you know, facing a kind of severe need. They are a special population. So the thought was there would be a lot of redundancy if we tried to reapply that same.
But this doesn't say actively fleeing. Nowhere in here does it say actively fleeing.
So that's part of the definition of who is eligible to apply for this domestic violence bonus funding, which we'll go over at the Bidders Conference, the kickoff TA workshop in just a few days. So that's a pass-fail thing. So there's not much sense in scoring for it, because if it's not exclusively serving people who are fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence, then it's not eligible for that funding stream.
So, okay, so that's helpful. So it was your intent then to make these completely separate, and it is required by HUD to have completely separate scoring? That was my real question. I mean, I
sure.
get that.
So
yeah.
To the second half of your question, no. HUD has not instructed us to prepare a separate scoring tool. HUD has announced that 50% of the scoring in the national competition for these DP bonus funding projects will come from the factors that are addressed on that extra page that we're trying to add. And so if we didn't add it, if we left the scoring tool as is, then the people applying for these funding projects would not have a chance to optimize based on those factors. The review rank panel, the PRC, would not have a chance to sort of give higher ranks to the projects they thought would score well on those factors. And so those projects would wind up at a disadvantage in the national competition.
Well, I think there's something in between leaving it as is and making it completely separate. That was really my point. Not
that is an option.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was my point. Thanks. Sorry.
Okay. Sarah?
Just a question. So it sounds as though you have a threshold factor section right here. So maybe there should be a category right here that's just saying if it is going to be a DB bonus housing, this is your threshold that you need to reach. I mean, that's just a suggestion.
I think it's a constructive suggestion. We're happy to add that.
And then my other thing is not related to points, but just more to SSF in general. I know there are lots of service providers that do serve victims of domestic violence, but there are also other agencies that may not be part of the continuum of care that do serve victims of domestic violence, and how are we going to, who may not know
right.
about this funding, and so what is the process or the outreach to those
yes.
agencies?
So in addition to our regular effort to broadly advertise the upcoming kickoff conference, through our listserv and social media, asking our partners to pass it along. We specifically targeted invitations to the victim service providers in our community. So I can't name them all off the top of my head, but I'm thinking maybe four or five different agencies were specifically encouraged to join us at the kickoff conference.
Okay, Alexis.
So since Housing First is a threshold factor, why isn't it listed as on this form tool the way it is for everyone else? I mean, you said it's a special threshold factor, so it is being considered. Why wouldn't you score on it?
Well, because all of the projects that are in the competition would get the same score. Or they would have to have the same score.
But you're scoring on the other projects. Isn't that true for, I mean, all of our projects have to be Housing First now, right? It doesn't matter.
That's true.
Renewals, new projects, they all have to be Housing First. And you're scoring the other new projects based on Housing First. So why wouldn't you score this project based on Housing First or applications?
We could. The design list replaced one section of the scoring tool with a section that is customized to specific concerns for victim service providers. But there's no rule saying we can't award points for being Housing First in the alternate section.
I think the question is not so much on the DV stuff, but on the tool in general, which is we have a threshold factor that says you have to be Housing First, but then we also award you up to 4 points for your commitment to Housing First. That was a discussion that we had at the PRC, and it was, I believe, Homebase's opinion that recognizing Housing First is a threshold factor, but also giving people some points for their level of commitment to it, for giving examples of how they are a Housing First provider, for how they handle difficult circumstances, recognized in the tool in a way that had valued the importance of Housing First. So that's why we have it in both places.
But it is not there for domestic violence.
You were right.
And then my second question is, so chronic homelessness is completely out, or not completely out, but there's not a requirement for the DV providers to serve anyone who's chronically homeless. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Kathy.
And this is just a quick question and maybe more a reflection of my lack of knowledge on this, but you refer to this in a variety of different ways, domestic violence and then victim service needs. And so it may just be me, but when I hear domestic violence, it's a much more narrow definition, and it's a much broader, and I think appropriate and good, that it does include trafficking and those other components. And I just don't know, am I the only one who, when I hear domestic violence, think a very narrow thing? And if that's the case, wouldn't it be better, I don't know if you have requirements by HUD to call it a certain thing, but I think it's important that people understand that category encompasses trafficking and other forms of violence against women or part people, and that's an important thing to promote. And so
I have a related comment question, very related to that, which is I have the same thing. You know, traditionally victims of domestic violence are fleeing a domestic situation in a house situation, right. And I think it's really important that we recognize that there is violence living on the street. And I don't know if my view or your view is correct, but is there a way to make sure that programs include both people fleeing in a house situation and our victims living on the street? I don't know if we asked that answer.
So in terms of the language, yes, I absolutely agree with you. At the top of the proposed alternate scoring page, it says, for all scoring purposes, domestic violence also includes dating violence, sexual assault, stalking, and or trafficking.
I don't think that addresses which situation they're coming from. It can be explicit. It must include that population.
Okay, so I do think it's an interesting suggestion to try to encourage providers to serve the full spectrum of survivors and victims instead of focusing on a narrow or traditional subset of them. And if that's something that the community wants to push toward, we can absolutely include that as one of the scoring factors here. Right? You're not limited to only pushing the stuff that's in the HUD NOFA. You can also push for community priorities. I personally think that that's a worthwhile one. And so if you'd like to award a couple of points for having the skills and resources needed to reach and serve people who are fleeing street violence, then I think that's a nice little idea.
I would just add, I like that points, but also make it a threshold that your program has to include all populations. Because otherwise you may just be, 2 points may get you there, but I don't think we want to not have a program that doesn't include the street violence population. That would be my suggestion anyway.
Or sex trafficking.
Right, which is more likely, they're not coming from a traditional home environment. Right, right. They may be on the street because they've already escaped it. And for me, I saw the language you had, but it's almost entirely on how even you described it, you continue to talk about it, and I don't mean this, you know, as domestic violence, and I just think we have to think of language that is more encompassing so that everybody in the community knows what we're talking about without having to necessarily read the NOFA. And so it's not just a comment to you, but I think to all of us, if that's what we really mean, then we might want to think about better language that will ensure it's sending the message of who we're targeting for on this.
So I think we're running low on time here. So is there, and we still have the second section of changes to get to, is there any agreement on Cindy's suggestion of adding some points for people who are fleeing street violence?
Do you want a specific motion for that?
Actually, I would like two motions, I guess. One is to include it as a threshold that population must be included in the target population so that no program is just from a health situation. That's a higher, you know, higher standard. And second would be points, so we could do either or both. I guess you want a motion?
I think if we're going to make a motion regarding the points, we need to be clear on where we're taking the points from and how many we're adding to this new category. And then we can work with home base to kind of firm up the language. I think we understand the intent, but we need to find a place to find the points if we're going to vote on that.
So are we limited to 15?
We are. Because that's what the other section is. So otherwise, we'd have to start mixing with sections, and I think that's going to take away from the process.
Thank you for answering the question.
Probably previous performance, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Split that in half.
Or is it, I mean, it's a threshold thing. Couldn't we just fold it into Sarah's recommendation?
Yes.
Where you say, because then there's not a point issue. You make a threshold that you, A, have to be stuff
both.
That,
but
she wants points,
and
she
there's
wants
points
them.
In the regular for
okay.
Housing first, and there's four of them. So.
Okay.
So we would take 4 points, 2 points from the 4 point category, make a category of the ability, you know, somehow documenting the experience and ability to serve an unhoused domestic violence population.
And add a threshold at the front for Sarah's suggestion that you have to that you have to meet them. You have to be housing first, and it's people who are actively.
So what I'm hearing is that maybe we want to take previous performance, leave 2 points in the current category, and add 2 points to showing that they have a plan to serve unhoused. For the language here, domestic
maybe
violence survivors.
Maybe plan experience or something, yeah.
Plan experience, okay.
Work out what's best.
Would you, do you want to change it up and identify this as that we're talking, that this is separate from housing, and that this is more about relationship violence? Because I know the assumption is that DV, we're thinking housed, and that's not necessarily the case, and maybe we just need to put an asterisk here and identify specifically that it has no bearing on housed versus unhoused, that we're looking at relationship violence in
seems
particular.
Seems like that could be a definitional thing.
Yeah.
Add a definition of domestic violence.
Uh-huh.
And then also the threshold. So clarify by definition the population, and then make it a threshold, and also give it 2 points.
Okay. So So I know that we're talking about street violence versus housed violence, but I also think ensuring that the full array of people who fall under domestic violence is important. So that includes people who've been stalked, dating violence.
Absolutely, that's written
here. Absolutely, so we're on the same page there. Anyone with specific suggestions on language is welcome to send them to sacramento@homebaseccc.org. We will incorporate them. I would love to hear your suggestions on how to word it. However, I think we do need to make a decision. Do we want it as a threshold factor, as a two-point factor? We should take a vote on that so we can discuss some of the other issues.
Do we want separate votes on the scoring tool, or do we just want to kind of take the pulse on that right now, and then we'll do one vote on the scoring tool at the end?
We could do one vote unless home base has a reason to break it out that I'm not thinking of.
No, that's fine. We can do one at the end.
So let's just take a show of hands. Folks who are interested in adding the threshold factor and the points for the planner experience serving unhoused domestic violence survivors. Okay, so it looks pretty good there. All right, let's move on to the other changes on the tool. Okay.
Hi, just to provide a little bit of clarity on some of the comments that were shared. First, the DV bonus and the regular bonus are unfortunately they're not equal. That's a HUD tool, so just some clarity on that as well. And then for the, to clarify also on the joint component, the joint transitional housing, permanent housing, rapid rehousing, that is eligible for the DV bonus funding, and we can talk more after the meeting if you want to about some of the specifics of that program. Thank you. Okay, I know that we're running short on time, but if you could pick up the blue handout. On the first page, there was originally an unscored factor that had to do with cost. So the original intention of that unscored factor was to award points to a project if their per exit cost was below the median for all projects in the COC. So as Sarah mentioned earlier, there were some data of requirements that we were looking for, and unfortunately for this particular NOFA, it doesn't seem that the data is going to be appropriate to support this factor. So the suggestion is to remove this factor from consideration, even though it's unscored. Any questions about the unscored cost factor? And Michelle will be speaking more about what the plan is moving forward starting September. The NOFA is due September 18th. And so we are going to start right away and having that conversation about data and what would be most appropriate in supporting us in this cost factor. And then if you move to page 8, under compliance. As you can see in the coordinated entry section, there's been a slight amendment. The data that was collected influenced the proposed language change that we're going to discuss right now. So originally, the factor requested or stated that the project reported at least 80% of its bed openings to the coordinated entry system, and that the project accepted at least 80% of referrals from coordinated entry. So that was the original language. We've now changed that to they will receive 2 points if at least 80% of new enrollments in the project were enrolled via referral from the coordinated entry system. And there's a small caveat at the bottom that projects that are still in the process of implementing coordinated entry shall be awarded full credit for this section.
Questions about this?
Go ahead. I know you didn't change the 80%, but given that it's a requirement, it still seems like a little bar. That allows 20% to come from someplace else. I don't understand why it wouldn't be 90% or higher.
Well, it's even more than that. It's not just comes from somewhere else. It means that you accepted those that you, it's just saying of those that moved in, 80%. So you could theoretically deny 50, house one, and that one is 100%. I know that doesn't actually work, but mathematically, you could get, if you had one opening in your unit and you rejected the first 49 people and accepted the last one, you get 100%.
Could you remind us, Michelle, why we're doing it this way?
So the rationale behind the 80% instead of 100% is that coordinated entry is still a relatively new system, and it's still being built out. So there's opportunities for miscommunication or confusion that could result in a program enrolling someone from outside of coordinated entry, even though that's not what's supposed to happen. And then in addition, we have our data time frame is April 2017 to March 2018. And in a sense, with that January 2018 firm compliance deadline, we're thinking that's really when you really truly had to not take anybody else from outside coordinated entry. On home base's recommendation, 100% may be too high a bar. Although, I'm like everyone, all the referrals from coordinated entry.
And do you think this will change next year, given what you just described? Would next year we assume it would be 100%?
That will be a decision of the performance review committee, but it makes sense that it would increase over time, that the bar would be raised as we get better at what we do and the processes are smooth.
So my question is not about coordinated entries, though, but it is. But it, so I will wait until coordinated entries finish to ask my question.
Are there any other questions on coordinated entry?
Okay, so on the unscored factor, I know it's an unscored factor, so the ISPADAT is still a questionable tool for certain special populations, and so it's an unscored factor this year, but having it in there, I just want to be on the record that mental health alignment with the ISPADAT has not been high, so if this is going to be scored next year, it is going to penalize those programs, so really want to think about that unscored factor.
Thank you. My hope is that the information that we get from the unscored factors this year lets us see those changes before they actually have a meaningful impact on people's scores, and then we can look at that with the peers.
Yes. I just wanted to add to that, because one of the intentions at the PRC level of having these unscored was, and you can see it, there's a parenthetical reference saying these will be scored in next year's competition. I don't want the community to assume that the inverse is also true. We've been trying to do cost factors for 2 years, so I don't know where we'll land, but it very well might be that next year it will be scored. I think that one of the frustrations is it sort of seems to set us up that we can only add something new with first having a full year of not scoring it, and I'm not sure if that's necessarily true. So I hear your point that it also puts us in a bind if we can't do the unscored, that we are another year behind. Now I'm just one member of the PRC, so the rest of the PRC might vote me differently, but that is probably my, just want a heads up, because the parenthetical reference here is true, but the inverse may not be true.
Can you I'm sorry. Tell me if you don't want to answer this now, but I don't understand that the ISPADAT one. That you're using the tool, or that you're taking people in certain scores, but you're being referred through coordinated entry, so it's really not up to you who's scoring what. So I'm not understanding that.
Well, my point is that mental health is not using coordinated entry yet, because there is still a big gap with the VISPADAT and the mental health assessments that are being done. So that hasn't been worked out, and so that's the barrier for us even participating in coordinated entry. So both things have to be worked out.
So can someone articulate what this means, though? I don't understand this category. That you are recording your scores and what?
Which? So we're looking at the average VISPADAT score of clients within a certain time frame. So what the concern was that, well, it's a way to look at rapid rehousing, which there was a concern that rapid rehousing is typically intended to be targeted for people with, I believe it's a 4-9 VI SPADAT score, but we are routinely referring people with much higher VI SPADAT scores to rapid rehousing. And so for serving a harder to serve population than would typically be targeted to rapid rehousing, they get points for that.
But it's dependent on who's referred, so you're assuming they're denying high scoring. I mean, it seems like it's not directly measuring what you want, which is, what's your denial rate, and is it related to your scoring?
Yes.
Okay, you might want to just, I don't know.
Think about that, yeah. Yes, yeah. I agree with you. Okay, are there other questions on the tools for this year? How many changes?
So are we gonna add that award then for the 80% piece, or is that still gonna be limbo? On page 8 on the compliance section, the award 2 points of at least 80% of the new enrollments in the project were enrolled via referral from the coordinated entry system.
Right. We had some discussion about whether that should be higher than 80%.
So are we going to leave it at 80, or was that going to be?
I don't think anybody's proposed a firm other target. So,
for what it's worth, only half the project seemed to be clearing that bar this year.
And I presume that's
good news about it. Oh, okay. Okay. We'll take one or two questions from audience members. Yes.
I'm just trying to find out, it goes back to that same question, which was the number of referrals, and we had a problem with scoring underneath that 80%. However, we took 100% of the referrals that we asked for. We were just getting more referrals than we even asked for. So we asked for one, we get 5. We never turned anybody away. We never even told anybody they couldn't come in. So we had a no-show that wasn't on us. So 100% of the people that we took from coordinated entry came to us, we accepted, yet our number was like 65%, which is a data that's a problem there.
Did you take people outside of coordinated entry? This will give you 100%.
That's part of why we're changing this. Yes. Because there were concerns about the data.
No, I just wanted to make sure. So this is, that's what I was saying. So this fixes my ever-going issue of that employee.
I mean, if your program enrolled, 100% of your program's enrollments come from coordinated entry, you get full credit.
Okay.
It's simpler now.
Okay, perfect.
All right, one more question.
It would be helpful, I think, for applicants to have a better understanding of what new means specifically and have that broken up so they know how to best answer the question if there are in the more detailed information. So is that that grant period? Is it since a specific date and time, which we assume that everyone was able to use coordinated entry effectively? Or, you know, how is that defined?
Okay, I think that that's defined as enrollments in the period that we're looking at. So that would be the March to, yes, okay. All right, Alexis.
I just want to say, hearing the percentage of projects that are currently above that threshold is so low, what are we doing as a continuum to support those projects that aren't meeting this criteria so that next year they can?
Well, I think that, just to be clear, Jason, you didn't mean of the proposed new language, you meant of the old language. The people, only half of the people are meeting it. You meant of the old measure, not of the new measure, correct?
No, the language we're suggesting seems to have about half the people on one side of the bar and the other half on the other.
Wrong.
Okay. So I'll let Michelle talk a little bit about
both. So, anything that we learned from the reviewing process that indicates the need for additional TA, changing process, better communication, there's a constant feedback loop to the contracts team and to the coordinated entry team to be able to be responsive to that. Definitely.
But there are still projects that are still in the process of transition.
Yes, that's correct. Those projects are not penalized here. And
but will they be transitioned by the next cycle?
They should be. We're engaged in that effort with all the projects that have not yet.
I would just suggest on that, if we have half the projects not meeting the 80% threshold, and 80% is a low bar for coordinated access, that's a problem. And we need to shut down our side doors, and it's not going to be reflected in this scoring tool, but My suggestion is that this measure, the bar be raised on it to 90%, and that it be worth a lot more points. Because if you want to prioritize this and you want the system to work, you got to hold people accountable. And if they're not going to do this and they're not going to get on board, they're going to hold you accountable.
We also have to assume that the system is working properly.
Correct.
So we don't penalize the organization.
Right. Yeah, that's the trade-off.
I 100% agree with you. And then I'm hearing what David's saying, and the situation he described doesn't match the math that is described here. So I agree with you, you shouldn't be turning people away, but if what David described is true, we got 5 referrals, 1 person got housed, the other 5 were just extra, and we didn't, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Why would their math, the math that you just, that he described doesn't match. So I don't know, Jason, if you can explain to me the math you guys are using, is what you guys are using is the number of people who were referred to you and how many of those became enrolled, or is the math you were using is you enrolled this many people, how many came from Port Angeles?
We're using the latter because of problems with the data to do the former. So the process that David's referring to was we went through the local competition. We initially used a data set that reflected denials, no-shows, and all of this data, but it wasn't lighting up properly, and it didn't seem fair to use those factors. So we backed off of that and just used what we knew was good data, which is enrollments. Are all your enrollments the result or referral from the coordinated entry system, which is not as rigorous of a criteria, and we will get to the point where we are evaluating on that factor, but if the data's not good, then it's not fair to do that this year.
So the new math system should, if we're looking to fix, should rectify the issue David's identified,
yes.
But we're still having...
And even with that,
even with
still,
that.
That's what,
yeah,
and I haven't seen the data myself. I mean,
I
saw it raw, but...
I'm not shocked to hear the issue that David brought up,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm shocked to hear the issue that Jason brought up.
But still not enough. As of right now, the Presto is still showing what it did. So that's my concern, is that could be fixed when?
So let's, I'll consult with Homebase on that, and we will get a message out to all the competitors, all the renewal projects, so you know what to do next.
So, Noel, your suggestion of making it higher, was that for a future competition?
This is for future competition.
Okay.
Yes.
We're the NOFA drops,
okay.
And we have to crank this thing out. And at this point in time, it sounds like it's still too new to hold people's feet to the fire because the math has been, like, the measure has changed. And you have to give people the opportunity to see how they're stacking up,
yes.
And then give them an opportunity to make the changes necessary to then be scored on it the next time around. So everyone should be put on notice that this will change. My suggestion is that this is an informal notice. Things are probably going to change and you should be prepared for it.
And to add to that, if there's a way that we can say in this competition, next year you need to be at 90% comparatively so that we don't get to the point where we're scoring and everyone says, we didn't know.
Exactly.
Well, you're going to get a year and a half heads up that we need to change the level of entry into this competition.
I'm going to suggest that we actually up the points this year, keep it at 80%. It is relatively small number of points, 5 points for audit monitoring. I mean, those are important, but can you, I mean, that's a lot of points. Those are significant things, but can we up it? Borrow one from there and up it to 3? I mean, I just think it is quite insignificant in this scheme of 15 points. Keep the bar low at 80, but up it to 3 and really reward those projects that are, you know, placing folks.
Or could you bifurcate it and give 1 point at 80 and 2 points at 90 and above?
You could do either of those things.
Still.
There's no problem with bifurcating. It's easy to implement. One of our concerns about making it worth more points this year is that there really are several projects who are certified by SSF as not having been able to fully implement coordinated entry in time for this competition, in time for the grant measurement period, only a quarter of which was after the HUD deadline for compliance with coordinated entry. So that would mean that a large number of projects are going to automatically get full credit on a large scoring factor just because they weren't.
The differential is they weren't combining.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
It can be done, right? It is not literally too late to do that if there's a consensus about where to pull points from. But I think Home Base would recommend against doing it this year.
All right, I'll withdraw.
I'm going to, since it's 9:30, I'm going to look for a motion to approve the scoring tool.
With the changes that we...
With the changes to the domestic violence, is that your...
What changes?
So the changes, we're adding a threshold factor that requires that the population must include unhoused DV victims, and adding a two-point factor on documenting ability to serve unhoused DV victims. Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Okay. So let's move on. We may not get to all the items on this agenda today, but you all have a calendar of the COC application, so our response to the NOPA. I will highlight a couple of dates on here. The Performance Review Committee is having its orientation on August 6th, and then we have 6 days, I think I'm quite sure two of them are weekend, to review all of the applications. And then we will be meeting on August 13th and 14th all day for the review and rank.
Can we provide lunch and other amenities to our hard-working volunteers?
Do get a lunch, yes.
A little wine, obviously.
After.
Short, really after. Short breaks, yeah. And August 16th, then, pretty quickly, right after the review rank panel, will be the preliminary priority list posting. Then we have the appeals period there, and then the that priority list distribution on August 23rd. Ultimately, looking at a September 18th application to have.
Can I ask a process question? I'll be done. It's not on here any review of that consolidated application by either the PRC or this body. So where is that fitting into the schedule?
That this schedule is only for the projects competition. I'll be talking about that, the other parts of the application next.
Okay.
Next month?
In the next month.
Oh, okay. I failed to note in here the advisory board approval. We're targeting August 29th for that. So I believe Kate has a plan for circulating some information on that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead. I just wanted to say for the record. And it's just that, and I know Home Base and PRC is working really hard, but you know, it was released on the 20th of June, and the kickoff is not until July 16th. And I just feel as though for everybody putting their applications together, and some have multiple applications to put together, there's only 3 weeks to do that. And I think that's just not a lot of time for everybody, and there are a lot of service providers with multiple projects. And for something that's dropping on the 20th of June to just have the kickoff, a month later, that's a long time. And I just wanted to, I know it's a lot of work to go through the NOPA, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of detail, but just giving 3 weeks for staff to work on multiple projects is very short.
Okay.
COC application and the new planning grant plan for COC advisory board engagement. I'm proposing that the that SSF will convene a weekly brown bag lunch meeting. Maybe we'll do posted lunch once or twice during the period. To both work together on the COC application and the planning grant. I'm reviewing this year's COC application versus last year now, and putting together a calendar of when I think we should address each of the sections. That'll be the first thing we look at, and I'm proposing that we do this on Wednesdays from 12 to 1:30, except for July 25th, which is the National Alliance Conference. We won't be able to host a meeting on that day, unless you want to do it in D.C. And that this would just be the ongoing engagement for this advisory board, our regular guests to review and provide input along the way of the development of the CFC application and the planning grant. And we would, again, review a schedule of what we'll talk about at which of the meetings at our first meeting.
That's our meeting next Wednesday?
Yes. Yeah, that's the 8th. Yes, the 8th. At Sacramento Steps Forward.
Are you sending up invites
to
everyone?
Okay. Yes. I wanted to make sure that no one had a huge objection to the particular day.
What time?
12
to 1:30.
Yeah, 12 to 1:30.
You want to post lunch? Is that what you're offering?
Sure.
We've never done this before, certainly at this level of regular engagement. So I'm looking forward to working with all of you on this and turning in an even better COC application and planning grant application than ever before. We've always been very competitive, and I think this will add to that competitiveness. And I also have the COC Advisory Board Annual Business Cycle Calendar, which we probably can't go over, but I did want to distribute, and we'll bring it back at next month's meeting to discuss further. This was requested. It's an approximate calendar of the activities that we have to do on an annual basis. So the NOFA activities, review and approval of several different plans and our charter. Again, the details described here, the responsibility, a description of it, and the month where it typically occurs. I also had additional comments around what we're doing moving forward on the data issues with the renewal scoring factors, but I will provide that to you via email since we're out of time.
Okay. So we have two items left. Jonathan's not here, so we are going to do care transitions update. But Kathy has the Veterans Affordable Bond briefing. Is that something that could wait till the next
yes.
meeting? Okay. And then, Cindy, you have No Place Like Home. I know that that's moving along pretty quickly, so you probably do have
I will say just a few things, and we do have a flyer or a fact sheet on the homeless plan. So the county, in collaboration with a variety of partners, is embarking on developing a countywide community homeless plan. It's a threshold requirement for No Place Like Home funding, which is funding for new permanent supportive housing for people experiencing homelessness with serious mental illness. This county is eligible for $5 million in non-competitive funding, and then we can compete, but a plan is a threshold requirement. So it will leverage critical new resources. The state has actually fairly extensive what needs to be in the plan, but the basic elements. And if I don't have enough, we will be posting this on our website, which includes describing the magnitude and the characteristics of homelessness, chronic homelessness, and the target population, inventorying efforts underway and partners in ending homelessness, describing current resources and identifying gaps, and laying out county and stakeholder plans to address unmet needs in key focus areas. We are in a very quick turnaround time frame. A lot of this has been unpredictable. The county is using consultants through focus strategies. Our principals are Catherine Gale and Amy Sawyer. Both have done extensive work with a number of communities, both work for the U.S. ICH, and both have done work within this community, so we feel lucky that we were able to secure their time. They're in the process, July through September, of stakeholder input and data collection. We have a number of groups we've met with, that we will be meeting with, some that are not scheduled, ranging from service providers, housing providers, county departments, criminal justice, managed care. And then there will also be time within this process to provide additional input. They'll be developing key strategies from September through October, again with input, and there will be a formal adoption by the county, we think, in November. So we're at the point now of gathering information of what are people doing. We're working with SSF specifically on data. And they are more than happy to come and give more overview to this group when there's time, you know, still within this framework.
Can I just also point out to folks too, so one of the things we were going to talk about is, you know, the Veterans and Affordable Housing Act Fund, which is now Proposition 1. But Proposition 2 is the funding necessary for the No Place Like Home, which initially was approved through legislation. It's been tied up in court. And so the legislature has now put that measure on the ballot. So to the degree that you care about all the things that we're talking about there, Proposition 2 is what will ensure that the monies get to the No Place Like Home program. So people should be aware of that. So they're going to eventually, hopefully everybody in this room will support both Proposition 1, which is $4 billion for affordable housing development, but then Proposition 2, which is $2 billion to fund the No Place Like Home.
And one interesting, those projects are unique in that the county is a co-applicant with the developer and is committing to services for 20 years. So it's a different, we're also in the process of developing that process, trying to coordinate at some level all the resources needed to do those developments. And we will be presenting that to our board. Everything is contingent on that. Yeah, I forget being on pass, but we've been working on this for, you know, a number of months. And we intend the plan to be useful to the community. It won't be what everybody wants. It won't be an entire roadmap, but we think it can further some of the good work underway and sort of identify those key areas we can work together as a community to really improve our response. So that's the intent, and hopefully you will be partners with us in making this plan work for all of us.
All right, thank you, Cindy.
Can I just, since I'm going to have to delay doing this, but I do want to let people know I have some materials here on the Proposition 1 that I want to share with folks. And most importantly, we are really looking to get people to endorse the bond. And so on the back of the paper that you're going to be getting, which describes generally what the bond will provide and the benefits and all of that, it also includes an endorsement. And getting the public to support this is really, it really helps if we get leaders in the community to endorse it. And so if, for example, the Downtown Partnership would be willing to endorse this, this is really important. And for anybody who thinks that they're willing to do it, I am happy to follow up with you to pick up the endorsement form. The mayor has already done it, and we've got a number of other ones, but we really need active community groups who can do it. So please let me know if you think your group can support this, and I will reach back out to you to pick up those endorsements so they can get included on the website and for the activities. So,
all right. Thank you. Thank you very much. We will go ahead and adjourn the meeting. And we'll see you next time. So,
Yeah.